everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Watch or Not with Jay and MJ. I'm MJ. I think this is in a different spot. I think I almost knocked something over, you guys. I think it's...
That echoed more than normal, I think.
Yeah, I think it's... Is that where I usually put things? There's something off.
Maybe I feel not. Like you normally put it on the table at the
side. I think
table.
I do too, but I feel like I would knock it.
Okay.
And I have it. Maybe I'm not as clumsy as I think I am. Was. Is?
War?
Are. I'm not as clumsy as I think I are?
That sounds the best.
Maybe I'm not as close as I think I am. Did I say that the right way?
Yes.
Cool. Hey, people. So, per usual, I have no idea what's going on. Oh, so before we go into it, you asked me a question. I have to tell you this story. And I feel like I've told this story on the podcast before, but maybe
But you've never burped on the podcast, so you wouldn't have ever said this. I don't know why I've been brought up.
So every time I burp, and you guys, I know burping out loud is like gross, but get over it.
You cover. You're ladylike about it.
Am I?
You don't just go in the mic and go.
Bleh. I do actually. When we get in here, as soon as we get our headphones on, I do that because you can hear it loudly in your ear. You know, yes. So I do that.
Yeah.
But every time I burp, I say diva. If I burp out loud, I say diva. And yes, like D-I-V-A, diva. And you were like. Why do you do that again?
I forget. Yes, I know it's based off of something.
Yes. So back in like, oh my God, what year was that show? Now to find it. Had to have been like mid.
We'll name the show.
So there was a show called Tough Enough. And Tough Enough was like a reality show where they, oh my God, first episode was 2001.
So you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, and it was on MTV, and it was six seasons. And basically what it was it was a pro wrestling reality competition series. So basically it was like American Idol for wrestlers. Like they had people there, and they tried to teach them things, and then you – I think people got voted off and maybe had to like win. I don't remember like the way it did it, but it was like training camp, reality wrestling training camp.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody got voted off. I think it was just like that, like boot camp. For wrestling, and one of the mentors was, oh, what was his name? I do not remember. One of the mentors was an actual wrestler. I don't remember his name, but there was also a girl on the show who.
Sorry, I didn't see you switch it over to the microphone today. I was making sure you weren't recording with your computer.
There was so if I were there was a. Now you get me.
There was a girl who was a mentor.
No, so there was one of the they had actual wrestlers be mentors for these people, but there was a girl who was like because back then in the Attitude Era they called the female wrestlers divas.
They did. And they still do.
She I can't remember her name, but anytime she would burp out loud, she would go burp. I'm gonna be a diva, and because the whole thing with the divas was they're supposed to be really ladylike and whatever and blah blah blah. And I think that was like her being you know weird about it. And if I remember this episode correctly, I think the male mentor was like, "Bitch, you better fucking shut your shit up. Like, you need to stop with these games. Like, we're playing." And then, like, I think at the end of the episode, he's like drinking something and he burps and he goes, "Diva." And I was like, I don't know why that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. So I've been doing that since I heard that. So it's been a good 20 years.
Trust me, it happens so often. When you burp, I say it for you. I just know you're going to say
it. Yeah, you're still my fucking thunder. Thunder. Is that a song?
Yeah.
What song is it?
Thunderstruck.
Who is it AC/DC?
Yeah.
Really? I got that right?
You did. It's AC/DC. It's Thunderstruck.
Thunderstruck. Okay, I know. I got it. Sorry about your ears.
I'm deaf, apparently.
I had to remember it. Thunderstruck. And that's all I know. That's it.
There's a drinking game off that song.
Is it every time somebody says thunder?
Well, no. So you get in a circle. And the thing is, when it says thunder, the first person drinks until the next thunder. And you just go in a circle. And so you each person chugs for like 30 to 45 seconds.
Oh, okay. Got it. So, hi, guys. What we're going to do today. Okay. that was good. We are going to discuss... Even though we're a TV podcast, we're gonna have to discuss the TTPD. We're counting the as the first T.
Are we?
The Torture Poets Department. We are.
Shocker.
I don't like that.
We're talking about an album.
Yeah, and I feel like we have to. So Taylor Swift's new album. So we're talking about that. We are also have a new Party of Three, and then we are going to review
Prime Original Fallout.
Yep. So we can jump right into the opus that is the Turner's Poet Department. And before we get too far, disclaimer, because the disclaimer, we both know that I am that last week or a couple weeks ago we did a whole we went a track by track kind of love like a skip for Beyonce's album. Are we going to do that for this album? No, and here's a couple of reasons as to why. Beyonce's album was 27 individual tracks, but of those 27, I'd probably say half were actual full-fledged songs, number one.
A little more than half, for sure.
Number two, because we had over a week and a half to really sit with that album and kind of review it because of when it came out. This one came out just like Friday.
So like 2 days ago.
So we haven't had the time. So we really only listened to it once. And so we're not going to be doing track by track. We're just giving general thoughts. That is not because we like one artist more than the other. It really is just timing. And we didn't want to wait another full 2 weeks to have to discuss it.
Well, and because I think you made this comment, but Taylor Swift pretty much said, Beyonce, you got 27 full tracks? Hold my beer. Here's 31.
Yeah.
It's long. What's the full length on that? I didn't even look at the time.
I have no idea. But we're going to discuss. I don't know if we'll do track. We're not going to do track by track because we don't know it well enough to be able to do that. Mm-mm. And to be fair, even when we did Beyonce's, there were some songs I was like, I don't even remember what this song is. So no, skip.
I call BS on that.
What?
The anthology, the long one, has 31 tracks, said it's only 2 hours long.
I mean, that makes sense.
It felt so much longer.
Because if you think about it, if every song is 4 minutes, that's 2 hours.
I mean, I get the math behind it, Jeremy.
Yeah.
But it just seemed so much longer.
It did. So we all know she's, I mean, so.
Taylor.
The best way to start us off. Yeah. I think the vibe of this album was supposed to be, so, and I've said this before, I think that everybody is going to vibes albums where there are a couple of standout upbeat shit. Troye Sivan started this. It's your fault, Troy. of like, hey, here's my upbeat song. And then you get the album. And you're like, what? And not that it's bad, but you're like, oh, this really kind of keeps the same groove.
So, okay. I think that's a better option for this album because I want to ask, what is the vibe she's going for?
I think to me, it's like, I if there's something that I think I would say, okay, and disclosure, you guys, this is probably the second full Taylor Swift album I've ever listened to.
Fair enough.
To be fair, like the second. I don't remember if I listened to all of Evermore. Wait. I don't know if I listened to all of Folklore, but I know I listened to all of Evermore. But my brain is saying I listened to both, but I don't remember listening to both.
Okay.
Regardless. With that, I don't know where I was going with that.
I think I'm going to preface here that both of us...
What's the song about? What's the album?
Yeah, what's the vibe here? Like, but both of us, neither of us are Swifties. We don't sing her praises. We don't listen to everything she does.
Correct.
So we are going to be, I think, an objective opinion here.
I'm a casual listener.
Yeah.
I'm a casual... And this is like regardless of what I think of her personally.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know her. I don't know her, but I'm going to get this out of the way. I just find her persona to be unrealistic and a little put on. But with that, I think that everybody has a persona that's a little put on, whether you're famous or not.
Well, and let me rephrase this or put this out here, because I don't know if you knew this. Emily told me that, I don't know if it's at the intro of this album on Apple Music or if she posted to Instagram, but she said, hey, everyone, this album is like 3 years of trauma, drama that I'm trying to get over. Like, I worked through. And she's like, I am better now, but this is like a 3 year dump of just like, let me get this emotion out, is what she prefaced this album as.
Mm. Okay.
So that to me, when you say vibe, that's like, what is the vibe he's going for? Because this to me listens as like, depression, sadness, gloomy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would get that. I think I would say, I described it as a slightly more upbeat folklore, is what I described it as.
I don't think I've listened to folklore, so I don't know.
Yeah, folklore, Evermore, that whole era. Yeah. Her Woods era, is what we'll call it. Because to me, one of the songs I enjoyed on the first, yes, I separated this into halves.
31 songs is a lot.
So the first half is the first album. That was released at midnight on Friday, Thursday, whatever. So for me, I liked Fortnite, I think, because I was like, oh, this sounds a little different. I kind of like it. And then I liked LOML, or Love of My Life, which I think the reason I liked Love of My Life is because to me, it reminded me the most of the folklore Evermore era, because it was really just her and a piano.
Okay.
Which I think, without listening to, I've listened to other songs, obviously, but I think if she's not doing heavy, 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 heavy pop, I think that her and a piano is probably the best for me, because she doesn't have to do a lot vocally, because she can't. And I think that to me is the best use of her vocals, is just her, very quietly with the piano or up against a really, really upbeat pop thing. I think what this album really exposed is how, I don't want to use the word inept, because that sounds like a really harsh word, but how vocally inept she really is. Because there are songs where she tried to get that high register, and I was like, don't go there. I don't like that. I was like, yeah. Ugh. But that was for me.
I will say I don't have any specific songs that stood out to me. I listened to the whole anthology, so all 31. Mm-hmm. But and I think we had some friends that said it. This sounds like one continuous song. I missed the breaks. It's vibe. I don't know where one really starts and stops. But that's also where I think the songs that stood out to me were the ones that actually had, I don't want to say story. That's not the right term. But took me on a journey through the song. Actually accomplished something more than just rhyming a couple stanzas.
I think I'm picking up what you're putting down, and I'm going to say this because I think that the best songs for you are the ones that really, like you say, tell a story. The ones that aren't are the ones where it's I'm going to, not necessarily rhyming, but I'm going to fit 1800 metaphors into this song. I'm gonna make it super duper wordy. I'm gonna put metaphor after metaphor after metaphor after metaphor in this song, and that to me, and maybe, and you could say, nope, that's not what I mean, because but that's how that for me is how I feel.
Well, and it's not that I don't mind a metaphor. If you,
I don't mind a metaphor either.
If you want to go for metaphor, if you want to use a metaphor to kind of throw some shade or put a little joke in there that people have to kind of decipher, I'm all about that. Totally fine. It's just, I can't think of the name of the song, but there was one where she was like, I'm on my knees. I think it was The Prophecy. There we go.
Okay.
The whole thing was what's the prophecy? And she's like, I'm on my knees. Please change the prophecy. Please change the prophecy. They got witchcraft. She's just throwing some random things out there. And none of it really, all of it technically are words, and they all have meaning. And the sentences you put together do have a meaning, but the song didn't.
Okay, I get you.
There's no consensus. It just felt like you were like, oh, this word rhymes here. Let me make the same stanza and the same kind of note progression and make it sound like it's good, and just throw this, and then repeat that. Oh, guess what I'm going to do again? I'm going to repeat that.
See, I think mine is more I think there are some songs that are so metaphor heavy that you lose the meaning of the song. You've thrown so many metaphors in here to try and just speak plainly. Just speak plainly. Speak now. Be fearless. I don't know why you have to hide it with the metaphors. So I think that's part of it. And some of the other things that I really, I don't know if she's playing with this in this album or if it's been previous, but some of the phrasing really throws me off. And you know what I mean by phrasing?
Give me an example. I think I know.
It's where I'm expecting her to hit a beat. And when I say a beat, even if it's a piano or if it's even subtle, I'm expecting her to hit the every song's got something, I'm expecting her to hit it. And she's like if it's this, she's like she's off a few. I'm like, is that on purpose? Is it actually that one song that everybody's talking about, which I wanna delve into, I Hate It Here. The beginning of that song, I was like, the audio, I thought the audio and the musical track did not line up. I was like, wait, is this a mistake? Because it didn't
I don't remember that one at all.
It didn't line up with like the track, and I think that happens like a lot. And maybe that it, I'm assuming it's on purpose because it happens quite a bit in this album, and that really throws me off. But I also go back to that TikTok that I've seen by people saying that that black people are on the are on a different beat than white people.
Mm.
But I was like, but she's not on any beat. Like, so like, I don't, and I guess that's the thought is like, and maybe she had too many, maybe she had so many words that it made it off beat. I don't know. There were just a lot of songs that felt like off beat to me. And I was like, where, because I Hate It Here starts that way. And then once it get past like the middle, it's like all of a sudden it lines up and I'm like, okay, now they've got the track and the words together.
Okay.
I don't know. It's weird.
And again, I'm not trying to like, the music was good. She is vocally talented. I'm not going to knock her. I'm not saying she's the best. She is.
Let's say musically talented.
She can sing better than I can. She can sing better than most people can.
I'll challenge you for that. I think you could definitely hum a few bars.
But my comment, this one, because again, I didn't listen to her too, like her most recent, like mm-hmm. the Evermore and things. Mm-hmm. I think this one stuck to me because hey, it's 31 songs. It's a lot. I feel like this might be, and I might get some slack for this, the most unrefined of her albums.
I get that.
Like, again, mm-hmm. because of what she said, mm-hmm. like, this is me getting over trauma. I feel like a lot of this was just more a quick dump of let me get everything out and not, and just like get it down, get my pain out, heal.
Which is fine.
Yes. I'm not like, that's totally fine, but it didn't feel like as refined as some of the other albums like 1989 or Red that I've heard in the past.
It didn't feel deliberate.
Yes, there. Okay, there we go.
And I think that's part of it. Like, it did not feel deliberate. It you know, there's that saying that people say, you know what, when you get ready to leave to go out the house for the night, you know, get dressed, put on everything you're going to put on, and then take off one item. Like, you know that saying, or have you heard that saying?
No.
It's a saying of like, put everything you want on and then take off one item. Because you're going to put on everything that you want.
Yeah.
And then you're going to say, okay, wait, I've got too much. Let me remove one thing.
Okay.
She needed to remove some stuff. And I think that, I think it comes across as a little self-indulgent and a little cocky. Like, I don't know. I think this would have benefited from her, like,
editing.
You know, editing it. Or come out, or to me, I'm like, you could have said, because the second half to me started off like way more upbeat and way differently, a lot differently.
Yeah, I don't know where, because I never listened to the original just the 16. Right. So I don't know where that break
it
is.
It starts with the black dog. And that even six or seven songs into that in the second half, I was like, this is definitely more upbeat. I'm like, I don't understand why you couldn't have like come out with this part. And then this is the tortured poets department. And then in the fall, you come out with the healing poets department or something where it's more upbeat
yeah.
and it's different and you've got a second half. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't have done that. Doing this is this is exhausting.
So do you realize there is one song, I think Emily pointed out, that there's one song on here that is about Travis Kelce?
Apparently. I mean, who knows?
So there is one upbeat, like, people oh, it's think, so good. Like,
yes. Obviously, people are going to assume because she only writes about, like, men, so it's like, which is it, like, who does it, you know? I don't think that's a fair, I said it, but I don't think it's a fair thing to say about her, because everybody does, and that's just what she's become famous for.
Yes,
is doing it, so it's fine. And I honestly, this album, like, listening to it, I thought it was a fine album. I don't think it was a bad album at all. Like, I wouldn't say it's bad. I think that this exposed a lot of stuff. I think she was more simplistic in Evermore and Folklore, which is what this reminds me of the mm-hmm. most. And I think this one, she just got too ahead of herself. Like, I think, and I understand it was a dump, but yeah. And you could do that, but you should also, you know, I don't know, edit and produce the songs.
Well, yeah, I guess there was just so much. It was a lot to take in.
It was
and
a lot.
I agree. I think it needed some editing of either, and maybe not pull a song, but, or maybe like merge two, but like it was just so. I don't want to say juvenile because she, again, it's better than I could do. I'm not trying to knock her for what she's done.
No, it's not as refined. It is an opinion. Yeah, it doesn't feel refined. It feels, for someone who I think I feel like has been very deliberate in the way that she has put out albums and the way that she has done things in her quote unquote eras, this felt like a step back in my opinion.
I can agree with that.
Like,
yeah.
Lover to me was like, you know, I think right before that, she came out politically and started saying all of her, you know, stuff. You know, mm-hmm. she leaned into her gay fans. You know, Reputation was obviously had a point of view. And I understand what the point of view is for this one. I just don't think that she executed it as well as she's done other albums.
No, I agree.
But you know, it's gonna sell like a gazillion copies. So
good for her. I tried to grab. I went to Target this morning, and I was actually walking through, and right in the front of the store is where they have the stand for her new album. Mm-hmm. But they have vinyls. All the vinyls were sold out.
I see. I would love a vinyl situation, but like I have nowhere to set my record player. So
I looked for one for Emily because she likes the vinyls and Taylor's stuff. So I was trying to grab her one, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, but you know what? There we go. I think I would give this album like a C plus or B minus.
I'd say C plus.
But. You know, like I said, it's not like I didn't listen to it and go, oh, I hate this. I think it really, and I read the lyrics along with this because I was like, let me understand, let me really read it, and it just felt too wordy. It felt it for me a lot of the times, but I was like, when she hits it, and I'm like, okay, this song is good. Okay. I wanted to mention one thing because there was about that song that was called I Hate It Here because people are jumping all over this line. And, you know, I'm not the first person to defend Taylor Swift. You know that I'm not. You know, I don't like her. Whatever. But there's that line in there where she's like, I wish I could go back to the 1830s, you know, without all the racist and without, you know, being sold off at 9 for to the highest bidder or something like that, or being married off or something like that. And people are like kind of, I think people are kind of coming for her for that. And I'm like, guys, get over it. Like, nobody cares. Like, it's not that. It is not that deep. Like it is. I mean, could she have, as somebody who everybody keeps talking about is so lyrically amazing, could she have read through that and been like, you know, in this climate, maybe I shouldn't, because there was a lot more shit going on in the 1830s than just like racism and like, you know, 9-year-olds being married off. Like, women didn't have the right to vote. Black people weren't even considered real people. Like, it's like, you know, like there was a lot more happening in that era. Quote unquote, to where I think if I were her, I might have been like, you know what? Is there a better way I could say this?
Yeah.
But to like drag her for that, or to say that she's like, you know, or whatever for this one line is not like worth it. And that was the song I said sounded like it was like the track was off at the beginning. That one ended like the last half of that. I actually really enjoyed the last half of I Hate It Here. I was like, okay, I like this song if the beginning wasn't shit. And then there was that song that was called So High School, which sounds like it is the opening theme song to like a 90s high school show.
Okay, I need to go back and listen to that because again,
I don't like the song, but I was like, this sounds like you could put this over now to a nose theme song at the beginning and be like, oh.
But nothing to me, nothing like that stood out to me. Like I get it. There was a couple where I bopped to that, like I was like, oh yeah, I could get to this, but nothing like I need to go back and listen to maybe one or two of them.
I don't know if I'll re-listen. I already put the song I liked in there because I don't want to have to revisit this whole one. I don't want to revisit this long run on sentence to try to figure out what I like and what I don't like. Can't, will not, shall not, cannot. Mm. Okay, you guys, let's move on to our party of three.
Let's do it.
Yay! So since we're talking about Fallout, you know, post-apocalyptic.
I think I did this last. Apocalyptic.
That word trips me up, you guys.
It's a lot in your mouth at one time.
It is a lot. We are going to discuss our favorite apocalyptic movies or TV shows, right?
Yeah, because there weren't enough TV shows, I think, that we have seen.
That I've liked.
Yes, that we so we need to include
that movies I've enjoyed,
as well.
That
yes.
I've enjoyed.
Right.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm going to do, this is a series, so I'm going to include like not a specific one, The Hunger Games, the movies.
Oh, really?
I mean, sorry. Oh, really? I liked the books, and I enjoyed the interpretation of in the movies. They were a decent attempt at it.
Okay.
I will go back and watch. We were actually watching, because it just popped in my head when I was getting my haircut this weekend. They actually had on Mockingjay Part 2 in the barbershop, so we were just watching that while I was getting my haircut.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's still, I'm like, oh, it's still entertaining. I understand what's going on. Like,
all right.
I will group that series, all four of those movies together.
Okay. You guys, this was like, when I started looking at this, I was like, there are a lot, because you think about apocalyptic, then you start thinking about, does Doomsday count?
Yeah.
Which I think it kind of does. And it just honorable mention, like some shows that I honestly really, really enjoyed, but didn't make this list for me. Like one show was like The Society that only had one season. That show was so fucking good. on Netflix. I was so pissed about it.
Okay.
Did you ever hear about that?
No.
It was a show about this town where all the parents and the small children left to go like on a trip or something.
Okay.
In buses, and they never returned.
Mm.
And then all the teenagers are left in the city themselves, like trying to run it. And I don't think they can leave either. I think there's like somehow they can't leave. And they're trying to rebuild the society, kind of watches them delve into like chaos. And it's actually kind of cool. And then I would have to, like, I think about shows like Fringe, which was, you know, a Doomsday series. You know, I think about shows like The Leftovers, which was so fucking good with Justin Theroux in it. And my brain said Carrie Ann Moss, but that's not it. Carrie Coons. But yeah, so I just had to mention those.
Okay.
Just to get those out of the way. Oh, it's my turn.
Yes,
it's my turn. So I will have to say, and this is kind of premature, but I feel like I had to throw at least one series in here. And just from season one, I do think The Last of Us is like great. Like, I actually listened to a podcast the other day, and they interviewed Nick Offerman, because I think he won an Emmy for his portrayal in that episode. And I do think that show is like, I can't even mention Last of Us without mentioning The Walking Dead, which to me had one of the best first seasons of a TV show ever. The Walking Dead to me, but Last of Us to me is like just great. They have started on a high, and I hope they continue.
You just took my second choice, so Last of Us as well.
Look at you,
yeah, boom. I mean, it I don't want to say it was groundbreaking, but it was definitely poignant. It stuck with you. It did a wonderful adaptation of the video game.
Mm.
It so good. So good.
Ooh. For me, I would have to say second would be a movie.
Okay.
And not in second place, but it's just what I thought of.
Okay.
Armageddon. That's more of like a doomsday, not necessarily post-apocalyptic, but it's more of a doomsday type.
But they prevent it, don't they? Like, nothing happens. Like, they prevent the apocalypse from happening.
So you don't think that counts?
I think when I think of doomsday / apocalyptic, I think of either
something
causes the human race to alter fundamentally. An atomic bomb goes off. A zombie apocalypse happens. A new government takes over.
Okay, then you're going to have to do number three, because I'm going to have to rethink this now.
Because they Armageddon, like, oh, it's great. It's a doomsday, but they win and nothing to the human race happens.
Would you count Deep Impact as post-apocalyptic?
Maybe.
Do you remember which one Deep Impact is?
With Morgan Freeman?
And Elijah Wood, yeah.
I haven't watched it in a while.
Because, like, I mean, technically they prevented it, but one of the asteroids hit.
Okay.
Okay, I see where you're going. You're saying no. Okay, you need to do your third then, because, like, I'm not sure now.
So my third, it leans into, like, the new regime, is Handmaid's Tale.
Mm.
The United States has altered drastically. That's where I'm like, something has changed. Something took effect is what I think of when I think like doomsday or post-apocalypse that would be in the same lines as Fallout.
Okay. Then for me, I would have to slide The Leftovers into there.
Okay.
Because the Leftovers to me, even after it left or even after it did left like this, every time I think about that show, I feel something I remember everything about it, and it was also a little weird, but like,
yeah.
But every time I think about that show, I'm like, God, that show was so fucking good. Like it just was.
Okay.
So you wouldn't count Independence Day as like a post-apocalyptic doomsday type movie?
I would, because the aliens actually attack and like destroy multiple cities, and I would count that one.
Well, then my third really is Independence Day. That was my third. Honestly, I was like, Independence Day.
There's that whole scene where the White House gets blown up, the Empire State Building gets blown up, the energy grid gets taken down from the EMPs. I would count that.
Okay, I also was thinking about The Day After Tomorrow.
Which
isn't like the best movie, but you know I love some Dennis Quaid and Jake Gyllenhaal in the same movie. Come on. It is like hot tea and their father and son. Let's get on it.
But they're wrapped in like parkas the whole movie.
That's how hot Dennis Quaid is. Like you know, like he is 70 something now. Did you know?
Were you aware? I was unaware he's in this, like, I thought he was like early 70s.
Did you see that picture of Ernie Hudson?
No.
Do you know who Ernie Hudson is?
Show me a picture.
You're so racist.
How? Because I don't know who someone is right off the top of my head.
Yeah, is he white or is he black?
Black.
No, he's white, you fucking racist. No, he's black. He's black. He's black. He's black. He's black. Ernie Hudson from Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Original
yeah.
Ghostbusters. Yeah.
Okay, Ernie.
He is, I want to say he's 80. He's 78, and he looks that fucking good. Like, I would strive. Like,
yeah.
He looks like he is 46 years old.
So, okay, but the muscles, could he be on tests, like testosterone injections and things?
I don't know, but you can usually, but testosterone doesn't fuck with your face. Look at his face. Like, he is not aging. 78?
He looks good.
You have to think that, like,
he looks good.
President Biden and Donald Trump are maybe 4 years older than him.
Yeah.
Maybe. Look at, if y'all want a reason to understand, I know y'all know.
I was going to say, are you about to, like,
I know y'all know black don't crack, but if you really want a really good example, just Google search Ernie Hudson, please.
You're there you welcome. Go. Boom.
All right. Well, you know what? Good too for this week's review.
Welcome back, everybody. Today we're taking a look at Prime Original Fallout.
Yay. So, Fallout is a TV series based on a popular video game recounting the world 200 years after a nuclear war happened, forcing people into underground vaults and leaving surface people to deal with radiation.
In a future post-apocalyptic Los Angeles brought about by nuclear decimation, citizens must live in underground bunkers to protect themselves from radiation, mutants, and bandits.
God, I got it. That was pretty good, actually.
You were close.
I was pretty close. You're welcome. That does not scratch the surface of what this whole series is.
No, and there's a lot of like lore with the games that I don't think were touched on here.
What'd you call me?
Lore.
So first let's get with our cast.
Yeah. So I think our main protagonist, the one that we kind of follow throughout almost every episode and our main focus, is gonna be Lucy McClain.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Ella Purnell.
Yes. And we discussed this before. Ella Purnell was in the Yellow Jacket series, and that's really all that I know her from.
Yeah, I didn't see anything else I'd really recognized when I looked at her credits.
Right. So let's talk about Lucy. Lucy is a vault dweller.
Yes, a natural born vault dweller.
Right. And she is like, she's what you would expect to be like she's, literally, if you think about 1950s housewife, she's it.
She's, well, kind of. She drank the Kool-Aid for the vault people. I think she's like, we're the best. They tell her vault that their end goal is to repopulate and
repopulate the surface when the radiation subsides.
And save America.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reason why I say 1950s wife is because, obviously, if you guys have watched or have played Fallout or anything, you know that it is very 1950s-centered.
It's very like during the Cold War when there was like nuclear weapon threats, which is exactly what we're kind of like in the games, that there's a possible nuclear bomb threat at all times.
So like 1950s era, but stylistically, yeah, it is 1950s.
And the music.
So that is why for me, I say 1950s housewife, because she is like super positive. She is like, I am a vessel to make babies. And like, she's just super upbeat and super like, she is very Stepford-y.
I think she starts out as like, I'm a vessel to make babies, but she also...
She has her own wants.
Yeah.
Like, she's not just like, oh, I'm only here to make babies. Like, she definitely is like, but I also want to have sex. Like, I want to fuck.
Yeah, but I think because of, like, the necessity of what the vault is, they don't really have gender roles prescribed. They're like, whoever can do the task needs to do it. Because you see her in the opener fixing pipes, taking jujitsu and, like, martial arts. She learns how to shoot rifles. So, like, she's very well-trained in everything she would need to be trained in.
Right. She's like the A-plus student.
Yeah.
You guys. And she's happy about it.
She is all about the vault life.
Yeah. She's super positive.
Moving on. Our next kind of main person that I think is new, this is his first thing I've ever seen him in, is I'm going to call him Knight Maximus, Brother Maximus.
I just think it's called Maximus.
Okay. Played by Aaron Motton.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know him from anything else.
Nor do I.
This gentleman here is a member of the Brotherhood of Steel.
Brotherhood of Steel.
And who is your Brotherhood of Steel crush?
Paladin Dance. Paladin Dance was so cute in Fallout 4. Fallout 4 is the only game I played, you guys.
Fallout 4, I think, was probably the best one I played.
And, like, Paladin Dance was, like, I used to flirt my ass off with Paladin Dance. I'd be like, hey, Paladin, what's up? And he'd be like, I don't want to talk about that right now. And I'm like, but Dance.
No.
Can we just sit? Can we have a conversation? He's like, look, dude, there's radiation out here. And I'm like, yeah, but, like, can we talk, though? Like, why are you so obsessed with me? And he's like, we're literally trying to survive. I'm like, yeah, but, like.
Look, I'm trying to repopulate this world.
Can I wear that suit, though? Can I get in that suit? How about that? Yes. So Maximus is part of the Brotherhood of Steel. He is, like, I'm going to say he's in basic training.
Yeah. This is like the Marine. He's a
private.
Army.
He's a private.
Sure.
Yeah, he's like a cadet.
Yeah, but the Brotherhood of Steel, kind of the way they describe it in the movie.
I wasn't being funny. Why are you being dismissive?
I'm not. I'm just trying to explain what the Brotherhood of Steel is.
Whatever. I'm like, but wouldn't he not? Would you not consider him to be a private or a cadet?
At the beginning, yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Oh, whatever. Go ahead. We're talking about Maximus and the Brotherhood of Steel and how he's a private / cadet.
I'll let you finish.
Oh, my God. Do you remember Cadet Kelly? Oh, my God. Do you remember that with Lizzie McGuire? God, that movie was so shit.
Where that guy, like, spits on the shoe to spit shine it.
That was in that movie?
Yes.
I don't remember that. All I remember is the name about it. I remember the name, and I remember that fucking Hillary McDuff.
I thought you were going to call her Hillbilly McDuff.
I was going to say Hillary McDuff. Lizzie McGuire, Hillary McDuff. Hillary Duff was, I don't know if that she was. Wasn't Christy Carlson Romano in that as well, from Even Stevens fame?
Maybe.
I think they're rivals. You're welcome. You guys look that up.
The Brotherhood of Steel is a organization that differs in their view of how to save the world. They collect ancient technology to prevent other people from having and using ancient technology.
Yeah, and the Brotherhood of Steel was weird in this one. Like, maybe I missed it in Fallout 4. Maybe it was in other ones. And this is also taking place after the events of Fallout 4.
Yeah.
But I don't remember them being like, governed by like the clergy,
by
self-proclaimed clergymen.
They were very like ritualistic.
Yeah, which felt weird to me, and I don't remember that being a thing.
No, but this is if you ever played the game, this is the group that has like the big mech suits, like the T-60s or what they have in this one.
They have the vertibirds.
Yep,
vertibirds.
The huge guns, the ones that have to have like the fusion cores to move in the game. That's this group.
I can't wait, and I was like, this whole show was like. So, like, is your fusion core going to run out of battery soon? Because I know in the game.
It happens so often.
I know in the game, like, if you didn't have, like, at least 14 of those extra things, like, you was going to leave that shit out in the street. Like, just sitting.
Exactly.
For anybody to just come and take.
There was one area where you had to, like, run. Like, you could only get out to the farthest area to meet this one character if you were in one of the suits. You had to, like, have 20 of those to get through all the radiation and keep going so you didn't die on the way out there.
Yeah. But whatever. Yeah, so Maximus was basically like, he is like, you know, an aspiring squire, which is what they call the people who help the knights of the Brotherhood. So he is an aspiring squire / knight. And he basically has been with them since he was a child when he was found after the events of a bombing.
Yeah, so apparently, so in this one, we find out there's been multiple bombings. That's all I'm going to say. Like, there wasn't just the one multiple that started the war, bombings. There's been more after that fact.
I shouldn't sing that.
And then our last kind of main character that I will talk about plays a couple different characters in the show.
He plays one character.
Well, but he has a different name. Like, in the future, they don't know him as this character.
Yeah, but it's the same character.
Okay. But it's
the same person, bitch. You ain't playing twins.
It's Cooper Howard, also the ghoul, mm-hmm. played by Walton Goggins.
Grab and call him Walter Goggins for a real long time. A real long time.
Well, at least I'm happy to tell you it's Walton.
A real long time. Maybe I did say Walton. Nope. I'm pretty sure I said Walter. A lot.
I think you told me Walter as when we were talking. I was like, I don't know who Walter is.
My bad, WG. My bad, WG. Yo. So, you see how deep my voice got there?
I like it.
I know you do. Don't make me turn this thing off. I'm kidding. So yeah, so Walton Goggins. Y'all know who he is. Y'all know. Justified. Vice Principals. Righteous Gemstones. Y'all know. This bitch can carry your tomb. But yes, Cooper Adams.
Howard.
Cooper Howard / the Ghoul. We see his Cooper Howard is still Cooper Howard, but he, you know, after the bombs drop, he becomes a ghoul.
Yes.
We don't know. We don't really know how. They don't really explain how, but that's what happens. So he's still Cooper Howard. He's just known around these parts as the Ghoul.
And for those who aren't familiar with the series, ghouls are creatures that have become radioactive, who have like super high healing capabilities, mm-hmm. but they mutate and pieces of their skin fall off over time. So they're like walking corpses.
And they turn to feral.
Yes. But there is medicine that they've created now that they can take, which will keep them sane.
It would keep the ghoulishness at bay.
Exactly.
And it's kind of like stops it in its tracks.
Yeah, so that's where he's been a ghoul. We don't know for how long, but he's been taking his medicine. He's a ghoul now, and he's been doing things and looking for. I mean, what was his?
Intro? He's an assassin.
Thank you.
Like yes. he's basically a gun for hire.
He's a bounty hunter.
My guns for hire.
And he's been doing it for like 200 years.
Even if we're just dancing in the dark. That's some Bruce Springsteen for you. The boss.
Why do
you call him that? What is this? What's that? Well, it's my collar. Oh. Ow. What?
And then there's one more character you wanted to bring up, just because the actor.
No, there's a couple of characters. Like, okay, like go on. There's so we also have Lucy's brother, whose name is Russ.
No.
Who is played by his name is Norm.
His name is Norm.
Played by who is Russ? Moises Arias.
Yeah, I was gonna even try to say his name.
So he plays who's Russ? Is there a Russ?
I don't think show? No.
Y'all know who Russ is. He plays...
There's a Reg.
No. He plays Lucy's brother, Norm McLean, whatever the hell they're calling him.
Yeah.
And he also... he's a good part of the show because he is... You know, he's her younger brother, and he becomes very, very inquisitive. He's a vault dweller as well. And he also, you know... is a good piece of the story as well.
He's that one vault dweller who don't get on board with everything the vault's doing.
Well, not necessarily that. He's just like, I think he's known as kind of like, not necessarily the problem child, but he's just kind of like, everybody's walking around like, I'm so happy to do this. And he's like, nah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And they're like, you should be happy for a job. And he's like, yeah.
Lacks enthusiasm.
Yes. Like, I think they actually say that. Like, he lacks enthusiasm. Yeah. And he, like, you could tell, he's just, everybody's like, we're so happy to eat cereal. And he's like, great, I guess. Like, what? Sure. And they're like, aren't you happy that, you know, all this is happening? And he's like, I mean, I guess. Like, he really doesn't. He's just like,
it's the end of the world here.
Yeah. He's like, it's fine. Like, he listened to Taylor Swift's album. He goes, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unmotivated.
Who's your next one?
Oh, and our last one we have to mention is Hank McLean, and he is played by Kyle MacLachlan, who we all know who Kyle MacLachlan is. Twin Peaks, Desperate Housewives, Sex and the City,
the original Dune,
Like yes. We know. But Hank McLean, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, he's their dad. He's the overseer of their vault.
Of Vault 33, he's the overseer, mm-hmm. which means he's like. The governor.
He's the mayor.
Which means he's like the president. Which means he's like the king.
Okay.
Which sure. also means he's like the dictator.
Sure.
It means he's in charge of everything.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be like, he's supposed to give, you know, pep talks and be like, hey guys, we're great. We're doing amazing. Don't you love that water we had yesterday? What about those Cocoa Puffs? Do you guys enjoy those too? Yep. Look at this night sky film projector. Look at our corn. We're amazing. So, yeah, he's that guy.
Maze.
He is spouting off corporate buzzwords just like any CEO you've ever heard. Corporate buzzwords. He's like, you know what? We're working 110% over here. You know, we're moving the post or whatever the hell.
I love our synergy.
Yes. He's like, we have great synergy. Oh, my God, synergy. From Jim. That was what Jim's alter ego. That's the computer that used to give Jerrica turned Jerrica into Jim. She was called Synergy.
Oh, really?
So whenever Jim would touch her earring, she'd be like, Synergy.
Oh, God.
You're welcome. So, yes. So those are characters. So let's go to the show.
So the show starts out. We are in Vault 33. So this vault system is one that I don't think I've seen in the games before. It's like a collective of three vaults, 31, 32, 33. And they all kind of will share and rotate people because they kind of allude to and joke about in the first one. Like, you can only mess around with your cousins for so long. You have to get a stranger in there at a sooner point.
Yeah. Which is definitely a little weird.
They went straight for it in there.
They said it, and I was like, haha. And then they mentioned it again, and I was like, oh, she ain't fucking playing.
Well, like, when her cousin Chet, the guy who's, like, the door monitor, he's just like, it's not working. She goes, look, I have to go meet my new husband from 32. Like, you can only mess around with your cousins for so long.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, oh.
It can't turn to things serious. It's like, okay. I guess we got values in here.
Yeah. But no, so they do have it where I think like 33 does the like corn, 32 was doing like potatoes or wheat. They never really talk about what 31's doing. Mm-hmm. But people will rotate around and, you know, you get.
I think they trade probably.
Yeah. And kind of keep everybody's stock of humans up.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out there's the overseer, but there's also like the high council who's made up of three different people. And we start out where we see like Lucy making her proposal for a husband to trade a Vault 32 to this council.
Right. And then they grant her proposal.
Yeah.
And they, you know, basically say, okay, we're gonna let you get married to this person you've never met before. It is definitely an arranged marriage type situation.
Exactly.
And we're gonna have a big party with Jell-O cake,
which looks like literally just a cake with Jell-O on top.
Like what? I was like, they said Jell-O cake, and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then I saw it, and I was like, is this just a white sheet cake with Jell-O on top?
And everybody was excited about it.
I'm like, it's just a white sheet cake with Jell-O on top.
Also, okay. like, and if you look at their food, they had like mashed potatoes and all these like things, but you would like have cans of water. Like they didn't call it Spam; it was Cram.
Yes. We know about the Cram. I've seen the Cram in the show.
Yeah.
Or in the game.
And I'm like, okay, so all these boxes of Cram. You had some like corn or whatever there. Some
oysters.
Wheat.
We find out later.
Not in this vault.
Yeah.
This vault has tuna.
Yeah. I think it depends on the vault, what kind of food they have.
Yeah.
But yeah, that cake, I was like, what is this? That just looks like whatever. I'm not hungry going on this cake yet.
But the reason they have the cake is, like I said, they're getting married. So Lucy, the... I don't know. Is she like the only person who's not married at this point? Like,
I don't think she's the only person. I think it just has to be like, I think it has to be beneficial for everybody in order for it to happen. I don't know if they really explain like the reasoning why she's not married.
Well, again, I think it mostly sounds like either every man is taken or she's related to them.
Correct. Probably. I think that's correct.
But yeah, so she meets her husband. They get married. They have a celebration.
They fuck.
I was like, then he comes back. He's like, let's go back and show me our new house. And she's like, okay. He just drops it all. And she goes.
And she is much obliged.
She's like, okay, let's go.
Which I would have been too, because he was cute. That was because her friend, the Steph, I think was her name, right?
Yeah.
Steph or whatever was like, you lucky bitch.
Yeah.
You lucky fucking bitch.
While standing next to her husband.
Yeah.
While carrying his baby.
Literally. And he's like, bitch. And she's like, look, I love you and all, but he's a 10. Like.
But yeah. So like after they have their little intercourse, he gets up.
Their little intercourse.
Their little bit of it. Just
they
like,
fuck on the table.
On the table, on the bed. Like they just go all over. He gets up and she looks over and he just wipes off on the curtains.
Yeah, which is.
I was like, what?
Which I don't care who you are. Like, that's just uncivilized. Like, you just don't do that shit.
But and to her, she's like, well, that's a little weird. And then she starts hearing a riot.
Yes. So what we find out is that these people that came over that helped, that were in the wedding and all that other stuff were all raiders.
Yeah.
And they had somehow gotten into Vault 32. And they came into Vault 33 looking specifically for Hank.
Yes, which is Lucy's dad.
Yeah. So this like it starts very quickly with the over violent, you know, craziness. Lucy does a very good job defending herself. We see our first stim pack.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. I was so excited. I was wondering how they were going to make those work, but that was really cool.
They don't even explain. They're like, oh, I need a stim pack, and because they're assuming people know what the game is.
Yes. And a stim pack, for those of you who don't know, like it's basically like automatic healing.
Yeah, it's your meds for the game.
Yeah. So it's not like, so what I think when it, so I think if someone got shot, the stim pack would like heal that wound.
Yeah.
Literally. So yeah, she's a stim pack. I was like, that's really fucking cool. I actually thought that was really cool why she used a stim pack.
But it helps like ease her bleeding because she did get stabbed.
Yeah. And so yeah, there's a ride out there that the Raiders are killing people. They are, you know, they came for Hank, and they eventually are able to leave with Hank. So they basically kidnap their main leader, Moldaver. Yep. She kidnaps Hank.
Yeah, literally, I think she captures a couple of the vault dwellers and gives Hank the option of either save the vault dwellers, because there's a bomb, or save your daughter.
Which was weird, because he ends up, they're both still, like...
Yeah, well, he, like, saves his daughter, and then Moldaver even goes, all right, you all saw what he did. I'd run and run as quick as you can, because his bomb's going off, and she hits the button to blow up the bomb.
Okay, she gives him a shot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so... That's a lot of what happens in episode one. And then Lucy vows, like, I'm going to get my father. Like, yeah. I am going up to the surface and I'm finding my father because no one else seems to want to.
Well, and because he's overseer and we need to have someone who can tell us what to do.
Right. So Annabelle is like, I don't know if we should do that. I think we should just kind of like chill here. And she's like, nah. And they do end up getting the Vault Dwellers in 33 do end up capturing, you know, a number of the Raiders.
Yes.
And imprisoning them, basically, in the vault. So, you know.
In their, like, kindergarten teaching room.
Yeah. So, these Vault Dwellers, and that's the thing, that's kind of the thing I like about it, is, like, they were not, like, fully slaughtered. Like, a lot of them were actually really good at fighting back. Which, again, I think it's why they showed us at the beginning, like, hey... They're learning how to defend themselves as well.
Well, and I think it's funny, and this is in a later episode, but when they're talking about what to do with the remaining, like, Raiders they captured, one guy's like, oh, I can teach them calculus and Shakespeare. And then the lady in front's like, I don't think they'll do them any good until we teach them, like, Kant and all these, like, philosophies on how to, like, live. And,
yeah.
Like, so, like, oh, we're not just, like, idealists here in the vault. We're, like, super intelligent idealists.
Yeah. Like, naive.
Yes.
So that's where, you know, our story really starts. Like, Lucy is like, she gets Chet, her cousin that she's fucked around with, and Norm to help her get out of the vault against everybody's wishes, and she leaves. And the rest of the show is really her, you know, running into the age-old question of any kind of post-apocalyptic show or movie is like, are you going to still be the same person you were when you left
exactly.
when you come back?
Yes.
So... Lucy's faced with a lot of, like, with different choices that, you know, it could either break her actual character.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's her staying true to who she is.
Well, it questions all the morals and things she was taught.
Yes.
Because
yes.
We find out that she was misled on a lot of things.
Yeah.
So she needs to, like, come to terms with and realize that people aren't as nice as she would assume.
Yeah.
Or as grateful for the vault dwellers.
Right. And as she's going on, she meets, you know, the ghoul who is this unapologetic, you know, like we said, he's a gun for hire. And he is sought after and he to be hired and he is feared by all.
As he should be. This man is amazing with a gun.
Yeah. He is pretty awesome. And this is also how we're like, Lucy kind of finds out the best way to get her father back is to offer something. And there's a doctor that we see who actually companion is in this as well.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool. So there's a Dr. Silvig that, you know, has some kind of, you know,
tech
or artifact, as the Brotherhood calls it. We find out that like everybody in the fucking LA area, post LA area, is looking for this fucking man.
Well, so he, like, was part of, I don't remember what the science, like what the laboratory he worked at was, but it was like, I guess part of like what we finally was like the government or what I guess was under Vault Tech, and he ran away, and that's where we were like, you can't run away. What, like you're in this for life. If you leave, we own you, you're dead, pretty much.
So yeah, so the Brotherhood wants this ancient tech because, as MJ said earlier, they want the ancient tech.
Yeah.
And then we also find out that Moldaver wants this tech as well.
Yes.
So I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, the ghoul was hired by Moldaver to get this tech.
I don't know if he was hired by Moldaver, because
he was hired by somebody.
So right? the ghoul is currently, when he's not needed, his current employer, I guess is what they said, keeps him buried underground and on medication, like drugs, just enough to keep him alive. But when he comes out, the people who got him out of the ground, like dug him up, they said there's a bounty that all six organizations, so I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. We never really found out who they are, have issued for this person. Mm. So he's just out for the bounty.
So probably like the factions.
Is what I would assume.
And for him, it's like, this is going to go to the highest bidder.
Exactly.
I would think. Got it. I think I missed that whole part. So everybody wants this dude. And this is how Lucy kind of figures out, this is probably the best way of me getting my father back, is to get this person, they call, like some people call it the target or whatever, to Moldaver so I can get my father back.
Well, and that's where, she like makes it to Philly, which is one of the like other habit, you know, like towns that are around her. And that's where she runs into the doctor for like the second time. But she's asking about Moldaver and finds out that he was supposed to be transported to Moldaver.
Right. So, yeah. So there's that. We run into the ghoul who's, you know, obviously trying to take him to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
And then we also run into, we don't discuss a lot about Maximus, but Maximus, you know, becomes a squire. He's helping his knight Titus, played by Michael Rapaport.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, circumstances happens and he ends up getting his own suit. Yes. And, you know, he shows up and tries to help. He's also trying to get the artifact or try to get the doctor as well.
Yeah.
So, like, that episode is when all of our characters really kind of meet, and then we kind of find out, you know, this is where everybody's stories start to divulge a little bit or start to come together.
Right? Well, because it almost breaks down into three facts. You have the ghoul, the dweller, and the Brotherhood. And and they all want the doctor for their own reasons.
Right. So with that, because we're getting close to spoiler territory, I think we should slide into Bay of the Week.
Okay.
I will say, I went into this with the chosen Bay of the Week, and I Walton, think I have to switch.
You were going to pick the ghoul.
I was like, he's going to kill it.
Which he did. Yes.
But only because I said from the trailer that I was like, this girl ain't going to do it for me. I was fully invested in her. I think Ella Purnell like killed it. I think you know, she never got like so sugary sweet that she was cloying and annoying.
Yeah.
Like it was like she, like I don't know. Like it was a perfect balance for me. I think she killed it. That's me. That's who I think Bay of the Week is.
I think we literally went on the same lines. Like I went in because in Fall 4, my favorite companion was the ghoul. I like how they cast these characters.
Hancock.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I love how they can be kind of like a little annoying, a little arrogant, kind of cocky. But they earned the right to be
which I liked.
And I believe this ghoul was 100% the same way. And again, he killed it. His character was amazing. Like, you understand the dichotomy between like who he was to who he is now and why he kind of gets that way. But he was a little bit more one note for me than what Ella was.
I wouldn't say one note.
Well, there wasn't as much growth. I feel like
Ella had more. Sorry, this is your opinion.
So yeah, one note maybe the best term, but like Ella had more growth. She had more dynamic range. You saw the emotion where she broke down. You saw the crying. You saw the happiness. You saw all this range. Where the ghoul, yes, great job. You killed it. But you were just, I'm the aggressive killer for hire. Like, that's all he, but he did a great job at it.
See, I think I would disagree.
But that, I agree with it. I think Ella deserves, like, I think Lucy is Bay of the Week.
I do too.
Yeah. So we'll just go ahead and settle that. That she is Bay of the Week.
Oh, you don't even want to hear what I have to say.
But no, go on. But like I said, that's where, like, she did better for me than the ghoul did.
I think that's, I think for me, they both had really, 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 really great stories. I think the reason that Ella, Ella kind of pushes it to me is because I was surprised.
Okay.
And I went in thinking it was going to be somebody else. And I was like, oh, actually, she really grounded it for me. But I think, I know you were like, well, the ghoul just kind of played this and this and this. I'm like, but you have to think of them as one person. And we really do learn a lot about Cooper. We see him at the moment the bombs drop. Like, mm-hmm. we see why he went through everything. Like, they gave us there's a lot of reason as to why he's acting the way he is.
Oh, it's justified.
So I think his story is a good story. Her story is a great story. I think the reason that she pushed it over the edge for me is because I wasn't expecting her to do it for me. But I think they both did, like, equally amazing jobs. Now, the Maximus character, I don't fucking know what's happening with that. Like, what was that shit?
I
didn't understand it. Like, why was he dopey? Like, was he supposed to be dopey?
There was times where, like, because...
Sorry, we were trying to put a bow on this, and I forgot that he was in that. I forgot that he annoyed the shit out of me, and I had to speak about it.
So there's a point in the story, and I won't tell what happens, but there's a point where he ends up in a vault. And I thought he was on drugs half the time, because he was just out of it, and he was just smiling, kind of like, hi.
I don't get... It wasn't even that. I was like, is he supposed to be... I don't know. I just didn't like... I was like, what is his character? Like, I get that he was, like... That he had like a rough childhood or whatever. Yeah. But I don't know if it was the way he was playing the character. I don't know. I didn't like him until the very end.
The last two episodes were really kind of the only two I liked him in.
I think it's because he was more serious. Like, I don't think he had to be serious all the time, but I was like, you know what it was? It's because Lucy was this eternal optimist, kind of whatever, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The ghoul was supposed to be this serious kind of like character. I think he was supposed to fit in the middle and be kind of like a little goofy and funny, but he wasn't. It was just annoying. Like, Danny Pemberton was better at being like a little goofy and funny, but guess what Danny Pemberton does? Danny Pemberton was the one squire that came.
Yes.
Like, he is inherently more funny.
Yeah.
He did more funny kind of goofy than Maximus. I don't know. I don't know what they were trying to do with Maximus. I just don't understand. If somebody understands what they were trying to do with him, let me know, because I didn't get it.
The only thing I could give him credit for was because of how they ended the series or the season to go into number two, like setting his character up. I feel like he might be a bigger part in season two.
Yes,
that's kind of what I think they're going for.
Let me get that body credit, because I know he had that body like that. Didn't know he had that body like that, but yeah, I had to speak on Maximus because I didn't get that shit.
I could have left him and not had him in the entire season. It would have been still as good.
I mean, it could have been Danny Pemberton, but whatever. True. How do I know who Danny? How do I remember that name?
I don't know, because
that's probably not his name.
From
he was from Superstore.
Such a good show.
Danny Pemberton was cool. So with that, since you went
Johnny,
what
Johnny Pemberton?
Where did I get Danny from? I'm just naming folks. I'm like Russ and Danny over there. They're like, no, his name is Norman Johnny. I'm like, okay, great. Good to know. So watch or not, you guys, this will be short for me. This actually, to me, it was really good. Like, there was an episode in the middle where I was kind of like, meh. But for the most part, like, I was like fully fucking intrigued. I thought it was really good. It didn't do too much. It didn't try to overdo anything. Like, it just did it. It just did what it was supposed to do. And it came, it understood the assignment, and it gave it to us. And I enjoyed it. It's a watch for me.
Agree. 100% a watch. Like you said, it did not try to do more than it needed to. It's set up for season two, which I'm definitely going to be watching. It had a clear, like, here's your goal. We got there in the end. Let's give you something else for next season.
Now hold on now. One thing, though. That CGI, though, that CGI'd Kyle MacLean.
Oh, the younger one?
I was like, it's 2024. Can we not do better than this? But it's whatever. But yes, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I agree with everything you said. It delivered what it needed to. It didn't try to do too much. It was a good season the whole time. And even, like you said, the middle where it kind of dragged, it still wasn't a bad episode.
It was solid.
Yeah.
It was very solid.
All around a good show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. Cool. Well, you know what, you guys? Stay tuned for next week. We're back to our Buffy series, episodes 7 and 8, Angel and iRobot Eugene. And Angel is the titular episode of season one, okay. If I do say so myself. The titular.
Okay.
Titular. Tits. So, totally tits. It is totally tits, though. It is the episode of season one. Okay. Every season has like the episode. This was the episode of season one.
Okay.
Do you know what the episode was for season seven?
Welcome to the Hellmouth?
No. For season seven, Bring on the Night was the episode.
Okay.
Season six, the episode was the musical.
I don't understand how this pertains to season five of us signing off.
Season five. I think people would say The Gift, but I actually think there's another episode that is the episode, but I don't really remember which one it's called. Season four, Hush is the episode. Season three, the episode is probably Graduation Day, but I think there's another one. There is, but I don't remember what it's called. Season two, the episode is the last two episodes of the season. You're welcome. So, everybody,
why did we not have that conversation on our next BuffyCon? Like, why do we have that now?
Because I would have forgotten.
Okay. Thanks.
It's a valid fucking reason. Little bitch, don't get hit. Don't
get hit. You throw hands, I'll throw back.
Huh?
You heard me.
Well, I cheat, so I got a knife made out of a bar of soap that I made in prison.
You're a random shank.
So you'll get stabbed, and you'll smell minty fresh. All right, you guys. We'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Watch or Not with Jay and MJ.
Interact and give us suggestions on what to watch at watchornotpodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at watchornot_pod.
And don't forget about Instagram, you guys, at watchornotpod.
Don't forget you can support the pod by joining our Patreon at Watch or Not with Jay and MJ.
And subscribe and leave a review wherever you guys listen to podcasts. Talk to you soon.